Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Chris Sheeran. It is 12:30 on the Baton. Here on this Monday, April 29th, 2013, the year of our Lord. And let's talk a little sports, shall we? It's always good to start the week off recapping a very busy weekend around the world of sports. The no-name Yankees, much like the no-name Miami Dolphin defense back in 1972, which helped lead the Dolphins to an undefeated season, only one in the history of the NFL, thanks to the New York Giants. Hello? You listening, Patriot fans? Didn't do it. 18-1. Best you can do. That was thanks to the 2007 version of the New York Giants. I'll get back to them in a second. Just a quick recap of the weekend, what we saw. On Saturday, now listen, I talked about the Brooklyn Nets as I stutter and almost say New Jersey Nets again. Well, the last three games they've been playing like the New Jersey Nets. The Brooklyn Nets have done this all season long. All season. They come out in game one against the Bulls, completely manhandle the team. They lead from start to finish. Take a one-zip series lead. The new Barclays Center. The place is going absolutely bananas. And then the next three games, they look lost. And it's no shock to me because I've seen this all season long. I've covered this team. I've done pre- and post-game shows. I've filled in for Sarah Kustak at the arena. You know, we've talked about this ad nauseum. With Gerald Wallace struggling the way he's been struggling on offense, when you have him and Reggie Evans on the floor at the same time, it's 5-on-3 on the Nets' offensive end. You got three scoring threats with the starting five. Brook Lopez, Darren Williams, Joe Johnson. The pressure put on these guys to carry this team is immeasurable. Think about it. Triple overtime game on Saturday. Biggest point of the game in the triple overtime. Carlos Boozer misses a free throw. Andre Blatch gets manhandled by Nazi Muhammad. Mojave gets the putback, the foul, see you later. And the Nets could be done tonight. Think about that for a second. A Bulls team that is shorthanded, but so far this season, including the playoffs, the Bulls are 6-2 against Brooklyn. Shouldn't come as a shock. Thibodeau is a tremendous coach. Tremendous. He proved that after game one, coming out and completely dominating the Nets in game two in Brooklyn. And now the Nets face playoff elimination against a Chicago team that doesn't have their star point guard, Derrick Rose. A Brooklyn team that had home court advantage against the Chicago team. A Brooklyn team that let Nate Robinson go on a personal 12-zip run when they had a 14-point lead with 3.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of game four. And they end up losing that one, as we mentioned, in triple overtime. Just unbelievable. You just sit here and you shake your head. And this is stuff that Sarah and I have talked about on the air during the season. You just scratch your head and you say, you know, this team looked like they were the best team in the NBA 2 nights ago. What happened? their crosstown rivals, the Knicks. They had an opportunity to sweep the Celtics out of the playoffs yesterday. They were down by 20 in the second half, came back, took a two-point lead in the fourth quarter. They lose in overtime. Jason Terry absolutely went off. 9 points in the extra session. And the Celtics live to play another day, and that day is Game 5 on Wednesday at Madison Square Garden. Miami Heat, business as usual. They sweep the Milwaukee Bucks. Brandon Jennings, Bucks in six. Don't think that's going to happen. Now, you can't get on Jennings. You know, why not say it? Bucks had nothing to lose in that series. But, you know, the Heat are probably sitting around like that guy in Ghostbusters 2. You are like the buzzing of flies to him. He's Vigo. Awful reference. Awful movie. But the Bucks out. Lakers out. They get swept by the Spurs. Say what you want about Greg Popovich and the Spurs. You want to kick dirt on them every year, and every year they seem to be there. And the West semis again. After dispatching the shorthanded Lakers, they only had 9 guys by the time the game was over on the bench in the fourth quarter. We all know Kobe was out. Nash and Blake. Team was a mess. Mike D'Antoni, he can't catch a break. And Dwight Howard, he's a free agent. Who's going to touch that guy? You want him? You want him in your locker room crying like a baby every 5 seconds? He's been ejected 4 times in his career. Quattro. 3 times as a member of the Los Angeles Lakers this season. I don't think he could coexist with Kobe Bryant. And if Kobe's coming back for another year, I just don't see how they could play together. I don't see him being a Laker. That's just a gut feeling. Mark Jackson has the Golden State Warriors on the brink of knocking out the Denver Nuggets in their first round series. What a job Mark Jackson has done. And this is all without David Lee, who's done for the playoffs. He's out. Andrew Bogut is a pretty good fill-in. You know, Jackson said, I've been a fan of the NBA my entire life. I've read books. I've watched games. I've played in this league. I have the best shooting backcourt in the history of the NBA. Steph Curry is on fire. Klay Thompson, it is a heck of a 1-2 punch, those two. I saw it in person against the Nets. They ran the Nets out of the building. They ran them from Brooklyn to the Bronx and back. They lapped the Nets in that game several times. And when they weren't running, they were gunning threes left and right. That is an impressive team, led by an impressive coach. Someone brought up the fact that, hey, didn't you have a pretty good shooting backcourt with Reggie Miller with the Pacers? And he said, well, I pretty much held Reggie back with that distinction. Which I think is baloney. Mark Jackson was on your team, you loved him. Mark Jackson wasn't on your team, you hated him. Doing that little shimmy in his Pacer uniform made you want to puke. Well, if you were a Knicks fan. I'm sure in Indiana, drove the women crazy. Not so much in New York. And how about hockey? My goodness gracious. The Rangers, last week, they eliminate the Devils from the playoffs. And then they can't clinch. And it was setting up a Saturday showdown at Madison Square Garden where if the Devils won, the Rangers would be extinct from the playoffs. But Blue Shirts went to Carolina. They were down 3-2 late. They got a lucky bounce off the boards, off the skate of Dan Ellis, and into his net to tie the game. And then, of course, the captain, Ryan Callahan, wins it in overtime, propelling the Rangers into the playoffs after a very tumultuous season, let's face it. This 48-game season for the New York Rangers, you want to talk about a roller coaster ride. If you didn't have that bar pressed down against your hips, you were out of the car. It's been ugly. It's been ugly at times. Don't forget, you could jump in anytime you want. 646-716-4961. Now the first round series are all set up. Last game was played last night, Ottawa and Boston. Ottawa beats the Bruins, and that had playoff implications because Ottawa was in that 8 seed and staring a first round series against the Penguins in their face. But with that win, they jumped to the 7. They will face the Montreal Canadiens in round one. Now, Boston, if they won, they would have won the Northeast Division, and they would have gotten the 2 seed. So there was a lot on the line in that game, and Ottawa wins 4-2. So they're the 7. Boston ends up being the 4. So Boston is going to play the Toronto Maple Leafs in that 4-5. They'll have home ice. The Rangers, who, as I said, could have been out of the playoffs, leapfrog all the way to the 6 with their win over the Devils on Saturday. And an impressive win over the Devils on Saturday. You know, Pete DeBoer, he was interviewed by Pierre Maguire during the game, and he said, we're just trying to be professional here. So they were just going through the motions. I mean, they played hard. Don't get me wrong. They're professionals. But the Rangers wiped the ice with them. Lundqvist gets the shutout, 4-0. Rangers are now the 6th seed, and they are taking on the Southeast Division champion, Washington Capitals, who they bounced out of the playoffs last year in Game 7. And I was there for that one. And it was sweet. So now the Rangers take on Washington. The Penguins take on the Islanders, who the thunk the Islanders would be in the playoffs. But, you know, I told Glenn Giangrandi, who a lot of you know on Twitter, works here for Yes. He's our head writer. And he's our head Islander fan. You want to talk about a guy who just bleeds blue and orange. I'm talking about the Knicks. I'm talking about the Islanders. It's that guy. He saw that they were facing the Penguins in the first round. And on Facebook yesterday, says it's the 20-year anniversary of the Islanders beating the Penguins in a Game 7. How fitting. The Penguins have beaten the Islanders 4 straight this season. They won the 4-game series. They swept it 4-0. The Islanders are one of the teams in the NHL that's playing the best right now. They really are. That's going to be an interesting series. I'll tell you right now, I'm a Ranger fan, but I am rooting for the New York Islanders. Why wouldn't you? Rangers is the 6th seed. It gets reseeded. So the Rangers could be facing the Pens in the second round. So why wouldn't you want the Islanders to win that series? Nabokov is playing extremely well this season. Tavares is the best hockey player in New York. And the Penguins don't have Crosby back yet. Don't know when he'll be back, as far as what I read this morning. How about the New York Jets? Because, you know, they love to make news. You know that as well as anybody. Giants, their roommates after 2011, they win the Super Bowl. They beat the Patriots for the second time in 4 years. The Jets didn't make the playoffs. The Giants are getting the back page. Obviously, they were the Super Bowl champions. They have 4 trophies. Jets have 1. That was 1969, by the way. It was 44 years ago. Believe me, I know because I have a lot of Jet fan friends. But today they severed ties with the guy that was supposed to come in and be pretty much their savior. At least that's the way they sold it to you. Mike Tannenbaum, Woody Johnson, Rex Ryan, Tony Sperano, who was in for a year as offensive coordinator. They cut Tim Tebow. They let him go. Done. One season. They gave up two draft picks for this guy and money. Still owe the Broncos money, by the way. Let him go. Tim Tebow played 71 plays for the New York Jets last year. 71. Do you know how many points he led the Jets to in those 71 plays? You have any idea? Take a guess. As many as you and I did. Nada, niente, zip, zilch, zero. He was the difference maker. No, he was the headline grabber. Jets needed some, you know, they're that little brother, or the middle brother, I should say. I should know. They're the middle brother who's screaming for attention. I admit it. I do. I always have. And I get it. But they're that brother screaming for attention. Well, if we're not going to win, we might as well make a splash and make something happen and strike while the iron is hot and bring in Tim Tebow, who not only got the Broncos to the playoffs the previous year, but actually beat the Steelers in overtime of their playoff game before getting absolutely drilled by the New England Patriots at Foxborough. Still led them to the playoffs. It was a great story. Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless. They could thank their national notoriety pretty much for Tim Tebow. Endless conversations from those two on First Take. Plays. Two draft picks and millions. 71 plays. Sperano's out. Tannenbaum's out. Supposed to be this salary cap guru who basically Isaiah Thomas'd the Jets. And John Idzik was charged with coming in here, and his first order of business was to get rid of their best player in Darrelle Revis. And we talked about this last week, and you know my feelings on this. I know he's your best player, but if you're not going to re-sign him, if that's your owner's MO, if that's what he's going to do, if that's his plan, if that's his business plan, I'm not going to bring back my best player next year when he's a free agent, and I'm not going to pay him 13% of the salary cap, $16 million a year, which I think is ridiculous for a cornerback. But I think based on what the Jets did, now that we know what the Jets did in this draft, based on what they did in the draft and picking up that pick, and I know they got fleeced. You know, they only got the one pick, and it's probably because Idzik took his time in trying to work out a trade. The Niners wanted Revis, and they had all those picks, and nothing ever surfaced with the Niners and Jets, which I thought was a little weird. Because why wouldn't you want to get the most picks? Maybe the deal wasn't there. You know, maybe we're not told everything. Maybe there was never a deal in place. But you have to think for a second, why? Why wouldn't you try to deal them to the 49ers? You send them to the NFC West. He's out of the AFC. No, he's in the NFC South. He's still out of the AFC with the Buccaneers. I get it. But you could have got more for him. But the Jets didn't. They did a pretty good job in the draft, though. I think Idzik did a great job. He brings in Dee Milner in the first round, the ninth pick. And you could look at it as essentially trading Darrelle Revis for Dee Milner. He's also not coming off an ACL tear, Dee Milner. And everybody's different. Everybody wants to compare everybody's ACL injury to Adrian Peterson and the ridiculous season he had last year. You can't do that. Everybody's different. Revis might still come back and be the best cover corner in the league. He may not be. And, you know, the Bucs and the Jets both rolled the dice here. Time will tell who comes up with seven. I don't gamble. I don't know if that's even the right analogy to make there. You know, the craps table, I don't know what's good and what's not when you roll. I have no idea. A couple of my friends could tell me. They're not here right now. In the first round, the 13th overall, they took Sheldon Richardson, the defensive tackle out of Missouri. They needed that. They lost Mike DeVito to the Kansas City Chiefs in free agency, so they needed to do that. And then, in the second round, as we all know, one quarterback is on his way out, and that is Tim Tebow, and one quarterback is on his way in, and that is Geno Smith. And Geno has predicted the Jets will go to the playoffs. Now, whether that's with Mark Sanchez under center or him remains to be seen. But now the Jets have – they had six quarterbacks on the roster. They now have five. Six is now five. They have David Garrard, Greg McElroy, Mark Sanchez, Matt Sims, and the newly drafted Geno Smith. Five QBs. They wanted competition for Sanchez. Oh, baby, they got it. They got it big time. In the third round, they took guard Brian Winters out of Kent State. They needed offensive line help. What didn't the Jets need? As I said countless amounts of times last week, put up a dartboard with all the positions all over it and throw a dart, because the Jets needed everything. They added another offensive lineman in round five, Odeh Abushi out of Virginia. And then they got another defensive tackle, William Campbell, in the sixth round. A fullback, Tommy Bohannon, in the seventh out of Wake Forest. 215th overall pick. On paper, and I know things don't really work on paper, but on paper, the Jets draft seems to have them going in the right direction. You want to rebuild. It starts with the head of the snake, a quarterback. I don't know if Geno Smith is the guy, but it's not a bad gamble. And you got to do something to push Sanchez, because I don't think that guy is cut out to be an NFL quarterback. I don't. Think about where the Jets were in those AFC Championship games. Think about where they were against Peyton Manning and the Colts. They had the lead at halftime. They had the lead in the third quarter. Schottenheimer would not open up the offense for this kid. They were running on third and 22. Something's not right there. I get it. He's young. You don't want to put him in a situation where he makes a big mistake and ruin his confidence forever. But if you watched Hard Knocks, the Jets edition, Sanchez was very self-deprecating, put himself down a lot. You don't see too many NFL quarterbacks, too many NFL leaders do that. NFL leaders and NFL quarterbacks walk around with some swag. They do. And I know that word's tossed around a lot, but it's the truth. And if you don't have that confidence, you don't have that swagger, you're not going to make it. You're going to be eaten alive. And that's what we've seen with Sanchez over the past couple of years. Now, granted, he didn't have an offensive line. He had Swiss cheese last year. I would really like to see Sanchez again with some weapons and a line in front of him. But open the offense up and let the kid do something. But who knows if he's going to have that opportunity with the Jets now that Geno Smith is in. And as far as I'm hearing, they want to get him up to speed as soon as possible. On paper, Idzik, solid job. We'll see how it translates to on the field. Now, it's funny on paper, because we talked about on paper when we talked about baseball. And the Toronto Blue Jays were pretty much, they were dusting off the World Series trophy to bring it up to Toronto, let it sit at the Rogers Center, because that's where it was going to sit for the, you know, entire season. Bunch of no-name Yankees over the past 2 weeks have taken 6 of 7, including this four-game sweep they just had over the weekend, over the paper champions. Robinson Cano at 316, 7 homers, 17 RBI. Vernon Wells, 294, 6 homers, 12 RBI. Travis Hafner, 304, 6 homers, 14 ribbies. Kevin Youkilis has some back issues, 266, 2 homers, 7 ribbies. Ichiro got off to a slow start. Now he's 7 for 22, that's a 318 average. He's starting to hit the ball. Brett Gardner, only at 253 with the average, but he's got 3 homers and 12 RBI at the leadoff spot. You can talk about the hitting all you want. Yankees started 1-4. What was suspect in that first 5 games of the season? The pitching. Correct, boys and girls, the pitching. And as I say all the time, pitching is just like real estate. It's all about location, location, location. And right now, the Yankees pitching staff, as corny as I might sound, is living where the Fresh Prince was with his uncle, his auntie and uncle in Bel Air. The real estate on that pitching staff is top notch. Now you have Ivan Nova out. David Phelps steps into his role. And Vidal Nuño is up with the team as well, the lefty that impressed so many people in spring training. After that 1-4 start, the Yankees are 14-5. They're 15-9 overall, 2.5 games behind the Red Sox. By the way, Boston, they won 69 games last year. I like Bobby Valentine as a manager, but you could tell he didn't fit up in Boston last year. He just didn't fit. John Farrell has these guys playing. John Farrell has the right stuff, I guess, when it comes to managing the Boston Red Sox. And that's why he left Toronto to go do it. And meanwhile, the Blue Jays are a mess. An absolute mess. I say it all the time. It's early. I get it. Put this into your pipe and smoke it, as my grandmother used to say in her broken English. The Houston Astros are the worst team in the American League. They're 7-18. One game better than the worst team in the league, the Miami Marlins, who are 6-19. Toronto Blue Jays are 9-17. How does that tobacco taste? 26 games into the season, they're 9.5 games out of first place. Did they lose Jose Reyes? Of course they did. Josh Johnson was scratched. He's got a tricep issue. That's why you don't play these games on paper. You don't. Atlanta Braves, who everybody was christening as the National League representative in the World Series a couple weeks ago, they've lost 4 straight. That Detroit lineup took care of that Braves pitching staff. That's for sure. Over that series, let's take a look. Let's take a look at that series really quick, shall we? They won that series, a 3-game set with the Braves. They swept it, outscoring them 25-7. Over those 3 games, Mahalam lost. Medlin took a loss on Saturday. And Minor lost yesterday. The winners, Anibal Sanchez, Rick Porcello, and Doug Fister. We're going to keep going for a little bit here, and you'll hear the rest of this on yesnetwork.com. But as far as the live stuff goes, it's going to end right now. But the New York Yankees, as I was saying, with smoke and mirrors, are playing unbelievable baseball right now. And they're playing these games where manufacturing runs and hitting home runs, by the way, are going hand in hand. They're manufacturing them, and they're also still clubbing some home runs. Right now, the team that wasn't supposed to be hitting home runs, second in the majors, one behind the Atlanta Braves. Their team ERA, which is a bigger component, 3.79. Their team slugging percentage, third behind Colorado and the Red Sox, 4.35. Smoke and mirrors. And a tremendous pitching staff. The same pitching staff that helped this team to win 95 games last year. Phil Hughes, after those first two starts, totaling 7 innings, has been unbelievable. His last 3 starts have been tremendous. After lasting 4 innings in his first outing in an 8-4 loss to Detroit, 3 innings in his next outing in a 5-3 loss to the Baltimore Orioles, he went 7 against the Diamondbacks, didn't pick up a decision. He went 7 against the Rays. The Yankees won that game. He didn't pick up the decision. And he went 6 innings yesterday, striking out 9, walking 1. And the Yankees 3-2 win with that Over Bay home run. He had 4 strikeouts in those first 2 starts. In his last 3, he has 21. Our Jack Curry wrote a blog about Hughes. And basically what Jack said was absolutely right. Jack hit the nail on the head. Hughes was looking like a pitcher who was wary of having to describe what went wrong again. There was a different look about Phil Hughes when he's gone out to the mound the last 3 times. CC has not had his best stuff. Each and every start he's had to battle, but he's doing what an ace does. He battles it out. He keeps the offense close, and they're winning these close games. Hiroki Kuroda has been nothing short of amazing once again. And Andy Pettitte. Those 4 starters, you keep those 4 starters healthy, things are looking very, very bright for the Yankees' future to 2013. A couple weeks, you'll get Grandy back. A couple weeks, you'll get Teixeira back. And these guys that are having, you know, their baseball card April so far, that Brian Cashman had to basically piece the parts of a puzzle together to make this lineup what it is, bringing guys in like a Brennan Bosch, a Kevin Youkilis, a Travis Hafner, a Vernon Wells at the end of spring training. Lyle Overbay, who was cast off by the Red Sox, waived. And you know, well, if the Red Sox waived him, they must know something. And yeah, they don't know anything. The guy could still hit the ball. Not a dead pull hitter. Could hit it to all fields. He's dangerous. And you know what? When Mark Teixeira comes back and he's healthy, you have a lefty bat off the bench that you could rely on late in the game if you need it. And he could play first base. Vernon Wells picking up right where he left off in spring training. That .294 average, 6 homers and 12 RBI, playing extremely well. Curtis Granderson comes back, you're going to have Ichiro or Wells on the bench, or Gardner. Brennan Bosch, he might be an odd man out, you don't know. And, you know, before we go, I just have to – Francisco Cervelli just can't catch a break. This guy, it's unbelievable. Playing extremely well, getting the bulk of the catching duty, and in the first at-bat on Friday night, takes a foul ball off his hand and it fractures his hand and out for 6 weeks with surgery. Yankees called Austin Romine up. It's good for the kid. See what he can do. He was hitting very well down at AAA, over 300. So we'll see what Romine can do in Cervelli's absence. But Cervelli has worked so hard to get where he is today and went through all of last year with AAA, knowing full well he could have been up with the big club. Took it in stride. Did everything he was supposed to do, worked as hard as anybody could work, and then another setback with this injury. Just awful. You hate to see it. And it happens a lot, but not as much as it has to Cervelli. So hopefully a speedy recovery for the Yankees backstop, and he gets back up here and he starts swinging the bat like he was before he got hit with that Rajai Davis foul tip. But, you know, your heart, you know, it has to go out to him. Yankees start a 3-game set against the Astros tonight. Yours truly will be on the set to host Yankees batting practice today, tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday. And then I'll be back on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as well as the Yankees wrap up this homestand against the Oakland A's. Busy week. Sports Sprint. Podcast, BP, TV, and I'm here all week with you. Chris Sheeran, the Off the Wall Podcast on Blog Talk Radio, live from 12:30 to 1 and living all day at yesnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Later.